Welcome to today's Mentor Moment. Mentor Moments are 10 minutes of our most impactful episodes packaged together for you. Today, Barry Napier. His company was valued at over 1 billion euro when he sold a large stake to SoftBank. Here's your Mentor Moment with Barry. Bring me back then, right? Before Cubic, how'd you start? How'd you get into this crazy game?
I started off actually not too far from here in Camden Street. Okay, so I left school, went into Camden Street, and started in Bolton & Company as a summer job making rubber stamps and signs. Got to meet Paddy McKillen. Paddy McKillen walked one day to get signs done for all the guitars in Captain America's, and we really started focusing on doing signs and graphic design and stuff like that. So that was a great little business. So one day I said, I need to get a mobile phone. So I must have been under 20 at that stage. Went and got a mobile phone. It was broken. It was a secondhand phone. Went back to the shop. They changed it. That didn't work. So this happened about two or three times. And they said, look, we'll just put you straight on to the distributor. So I went and met the distributor and said, look, this thing's not working. And then a few weeks later, I ended up working there.
What kind of phone was it? Can you remember?
It was a Panasonic. It was an F1, and it was cloned at the time to a car phone. And the car phone, the cloning wasn't working. So it was well before GSM in the background. It was ESN numbers, so it was analog.
No way.
Yeah, it was like almost like an ISDN line dialing in the background. Ben wouldn't know what an ISDN line is either. Then I started selling mobile phones, and then I realized, you know, Ireland's a small island, so internet wasn't strong then. So we started looking up all the phone books at the time. Again, Ben wouldn't even know what a phone book is. Okay, we had all different numbers in different counties, if you remember. So we started looking up different shops and creating a distribution for that. And then we realized, well, why are we just doing this in Ireland? You know, we obviously have to be able to buy and sell these commodities all around the world. So we started buying phones in from around the world and putting them in here. And then ultimately, I just thought, you know, actually, I worked with a gentleman at the time. It was MCJ. It was a guy called Mervyn Chamney. Still very good friends with him today. Lunatic to work with. I was down in Nace, and it was just, I found him just real difficult. He was a real challenge to work with. I'm an outgoing guy. He's an outgoing guy. So I just decided, no, I'll go a different way. So I then went out. I ended up working then with Tony Boyle, who was in Sigma, who had the Motorola agency.
Yes.
So I worked with a gentleman there called Des Crotty. And we then decided, look, we need to get more than just Motorola. So we went out to try and get all the brands in. So we started off with Mitsubishi and NEC. So the old brands.
Yeah, right back in the day, background. Yeah.
And it's very funny. I'm really, really good friends with the guy that used to work in NEC. And I gave him his biggest order. I said, look, let's try and buy 2,000 of those phones. And he's like, what are you going to do with them? And we literally started moving them around the world. Okay, supply and demand and exchange rates. I was absolutely excellent and started up a trading business in there. And we got all the brands into Sigma and did really, really well. And then I just decided, do you know what? After 4.5, 5 years, I just want to do this for myself. So just left, partnered up with someone else, and away we went. So I've always been involved in technology in some shape or form. It was hardware at the time. And I said, we set up a company then called CTC, which was Celtic Telecom Consultants. And then we bought a company in...
Were you still distributing it?
Yeah, it was a small little distribution base.
So you were supplying mobile phone shops all over Ireland
and then trading them internationally as well.
That was my first gig. I was 15, got a job in a mobile phone shop.
Which one?
Down in Nina.
Who was it?
It was Tom McGrath down in Nina.
Hiya, Tom.
Yeah. No way. Yeah. I worked there from 15 and then started doing the markets on a Sunday. Traveled all around
Selling
Ireland.
Selling accessories, leather cases and headsets.
Oh, unreal. I was doing unlocking.
Okay.
I was doing the snap-on cases.
Yep.
Repairs. That was when you got the Nokia. You used to get the little screwdriver.
See, even Ben doesn't even remember the word Nokia. Like, it was the best-selling phone in the world.
3210.
See what I mean?
3310. Like, and so I did that. And then when I went to college, spun that out into like a mobile phone shop in UL. Ran that for 4 years. Always doing the markets every Sunday. I used to work 7 days. Like, it was such crack.
The one thing, as I said to you, for me, doing phones, we built that business up. And sorry for cutting you. We then bought a company called Brightpoint. They came to buy us out originally.
What were Brightpoint?
Brightpoint had the Nokia agency and other agencies, and we didn't have Nokia at the time. Nokia was the number one.
Well, Nokia were the iPhone, right? Were the one.
Yeah, of course.
We'd sell probably 10 Nokias for every one other phone.
And sure, Apple wasn't even out at that stage. That was 2005, 2006. So this would have been 01, 02. They came to acquire us, and then we found a hole in their accounts in the due diligence. So they end up removing the executive team, some of the executive team out of the company. Obviously, a NASDAQ quoted company, so they were head offices in the US. And then they said, look, the deal's on ice, we have a problem. And I just saw an opportunity. So I flew to Schiphol Airport, met the head of Europe, and said, look, Ireland's an island. It's a bit of a problem for you. You know, why don't we just buy it off you? Okay, so we
buy Brightpoint in Ireland.
Yeah.
So we what were they doing here?
So they had the Nokia agency in Ireland.
Gotcha.
And they were supplying all the stores. They were supplying O2 at the time.
Yeah.
So we said, okay, shook hands on a number. Okay, at the time, got on the plane and came back and said, okay, now we need to come up with the money, and we've just bought the company. So we worked with Arthur Cox, who we still work with today, absolutely excellently. And did a contract, bought the business, got the business funded. Okay, and then sat down with the team and said, look, we walked in, you know, doing 8,000 phones is what we need to do a month to break even. And 3 months later, we were doing 12,000 phones. So got the team behind us. We grew that business up in 2008, 2009 to about 150, 155 million euros revenue a year. So we hit the top 250 companies in revenue in Ireland. And then I was just like, okay, you know, I'm kind of done at this. You know, it was burnt out. It was trading an awful lot. And I just said, look, I need to do something a bit different. So we sold the assets of that company to DCC. And then we became a small investor in Cubic, came up with an idea of, you know, let's bring distribution of connectivity out there. And we just used the shell of Cubic to go and do that. You know, bought in our own technology, brought in our own core, and just built it up from that.
That was a whistle-stop tour. Bring me
back. We're only at 2009, 2010 now. We still have a bit to go.
Oh, we still got 40 minutes. We're good. When you say you kind of had got fed up with it, what did you want to do? What were you thinking? Like, what were you feeling back then? Like, what were you thinking you wanted to do?
So the company was going well. I think there was about 140 people in the business. 80% of the revenue was coming out of me and another person on the team because we were trading. It was just, you know, it takes...
You said trading, what do you mean?
So we were buying phones, looking at what was being manufactured, when it was being manufactured, looking at the timelines, calling on the stock, then holding the stock and then selling it into different locations around the world. So there was the Nokia N95 at the time. Mm. We were buying a lot of white ones because in Asia, right, and APAC, they love white. Okay, so we would try to buy as many of the white allocations as we possibly could, and then we would trade them out. So we did really well.
Okay.
Out of that. Margins were really good at the time. Okay.
So you were selling phones, but not really. You were more kind of trading options almost.
100%. Okay. And it's funny because you'd be looking at production, so you'd be looking at time. Yeah, like it was amazing. It was really, really good. And you were making really good margins. And then as that business grew, margins got smaller. And then the pressure got higher, and like it does take its time. Like, you know, I started having kids, you know, I was in China for the kids' first day of school. You know, like you look back, like, it's hard going. And being an entrepreneur, like, you know, I think one thing that resonates with every entrepreneur is resilience and, you know, that's it. And perseverance, you know, no is not an option. So anyone that's ever worked with me will say to you, Barry, say no is not an option. Okay. Cubic's a prime example of that. You can't do it. Why? We've got software. Software can fix that. Okay. Back that time, we didn't have software. It was hardware. And, you know, a 40-foot truck would turn up, you know, with 8,000 phones. You know, you had 30 days to sell them, you know, otherwise you had a big bill. So, you know, you're on the road doing that. I think it just took its time and its toll. And you kind of just said, I'm kind of, you know, I want to do something a little bit different. And hey, presto, we did something completely different.
Mm. So you sold out then, and then you acquired, did you say acquired Cubic as part of the deal, or how did that work?
Went into Cubic as an investor originally with other investors.
What was Cubic?
Cubic at the time was a roaming company called MaxRoam. Okay, and it said that it had its own roaming technology and it had its own patents and this, that, and the other. And the more we got into it, that wasn't really the factual part of it. It wasn't there, but there was like good team, hard work and people that were there. But, you know, it was more of a marketing company is what I would say to you than an actual technology company. But I had the idea of, you know, let's just bring distribution to connectivity to distribution and put the two together. And that really came from, you know, imagine having just one pane of glass that you could manage your connections all around the world. Sounds really simple. It was beautiful, very expensive to do it, very timely to do it, and a lot of regulations. So I say we bit off a little bit too much in the dream and the vision originally, and then we found out how costly it was. We then set up our own mobile network. Okay, we got a license. We got that in Liechtenstein of all places, you know, at the time. So we went over, met with the regulator. We created, had our own license. So we had a GSM license.
What did that do? Like a virtual network around the world, or how did that work?
So the whole idea is once you have a license, you're a member of a club and stuff, and you've got a set of reputations then to stand up, and you've got regulators then who are supporting you. So I think, you know, it's creating, it's like having a driver's license. You know, they may not like the car you drive, but they at least they know you've got a license and you're reputable. So it was building that reputation up. Okay, we then started building up our own mobile core. Okay, so if you look at it, every mobile operator in any country has a mobile core and then it has its radio access network.
What's a mobile core?
So a mobile core is when your SIM card or your phone turns on, it authenticates. So it goes from here into the base station to the antenna that you see on the road. Yeah. It then goes from there back to the mobile core that says, hey, here's Gary, his phone, he's got credit, he's good to go. And it goes back and allows you access.
Right.
So we built that core and we built a really sophisticated core. So I would say to you, more sophisticated than the local operator. So we created that as a Formula One car. So think of a Formula One car and the wheels and the tires are as a radio access network in different countries. So we could change them really quickly and really rapidly. So based on your location, if you went to the UK, we would put you onto BTEE in the UK. So you're not roaming. You're now, you have a passport. You're now created like a local citizen.
Right. Okay. I getcha.
So then we started looking at assets of what could we do. We started looking at HP, Lenovo and Panasonic. We started doing laptops and tablets. And then we realized that, you know, we tried to connect 100,000 and only 40,000 would really connect, and only 50% of them would connect on a monthly basis. So the cost of acquisition of that customer was really high.
Who was your customer?
At that time, it would have been Panasonic, HP, and Lenovo.
Oh, you were direct B2B. Right,
and they were then doing enterprise sales. So really hard business is what I would say to you.
So you were connecting kind of smaller devices like tablets, laptops to GSM networks.
Correct.
Gotcha.
And then I tell you what was very funny is the Web Summit was here in 2013. Okay.
Back in the glory days.
Yeah. And Elon Musk went by me just past Crow's Pub. He was driving a blue Tesla with a yellow plate on it from the UK. And I was talking to a gentleman called Owen Cruz from Nokia at the time. And I said to him, are those cars connected? I said, I really think they're connected. I'm going to see if I can get a contract with Tesla. So our goal was to try and create that opportunity. We created that opportunity a few months later. So in January, we got contact into Tesla, met with the head of supply chain. And then in April of that year, we were standing with Elon Musk and President Liu, right, in China launching their product. So we did China and Hong Kong for a couple of years with Tesla.
Give me that timeline again.
So we met them in January, and in April, we were launching their cars.